Hello, and welcome to Mike M's Weekly Reads. This is the final episode of the year. The next one will be released after the first. So I want to thank you all for listening to the show, for those of you that do listen. It's been a heck of a year. A lot of good comics read, a lot of good questions. I've enjoyed doing this show because, like I've said before, it's kind of like my diary of comic books or comic related things. I just like doing this. I don't like hearing my own voice, but I like talking about it and it just make just thinking about it. So I'm just recording my thoughts mostly. And I don't edit. So I thank you all for being patient. I eat on my podcast. I drink on my podcast. What you get is 100% me. So if you ever meet me, this is me. I'm a little odd. I love comic books. Have the philosophy you can never have enough comic books. I love good comic books. I love bad comic books. I love to read it all. Even comic books I don't like, I'm glad I read them because if you read a bad comic book and then you read something else, it makes it stand out more. But plus, the thing you really get is, to me, my philosophy has always been every comic matters. The good, the bad, every story is, in my mind, a continuity in history, the history of that character, whether it be out of continuity, like All-Star Superman or All-Star Batman, or in continuity. In my mind, it's historical continuity for the character, and it matters. And as far as independence, you don't so much get that continuity, you get, a story, but I love exploring the artwork, I love exploring the stories. I love seeing what's out there. I love people thinking their thoughts. I love seeing the same thing in a different voice. Because, I mean, if you think about it, we've all seen almost everything that you can see in fiction. Yeah, there's some twists and stuff I've never seen before. But, a sci-fi story usually plays out similar tones. Mystery story plays out in similar tones. A superhero story plays out. You fight good and evil. It's all one big soap opera, is what it is, especially when you think of the big two. And I love that. That's why I love the CW shows. They're kind of like mini soap operas. They're that. And it kind of hooks me. Matter of fact, I ran out of CW shows to watch, and I watched The Gift. The Gifted is phenomenal. It has to be my second favorite show behind Gotham. It's just so good. Titans is in there somewhere, probably in the top five. But and then Legends of Tomorrow's got to be in there. And here's why I like it. I totally escape into that series, and there's Easter eggs, and there's fun. It's just so lighthearted and fun, and comedic, and it's kind of what I need to lighten the mood. So I enjoy that show very much. But anyway, I turned on Krypton, and it's been on my DVR for a while, and it started off slow for me. But I swear I'm in the fifth episode of Krypton, and I'm just like blown away. I am blown away by the visuals. I'm blown away by this world. I'm blown away by the actors. This is what I love about comic TV shows. I don't want them to follow the comic books. I want them to be different. And that's what this is. That's what The Gifted is. That's what Gotham is. That's why they're on the top of my stack. Is because there's things that take the things I love and then turn them into something that is their own. And that's why I love them. Because I don't want to see something I already read. I like when they just play with the ideas and give me something different that I haven't seen. And those are three examples, and that's why those shows, Titans too, that's why it's there. It's giving me something I haven't seen. Legends of Tomorrow, it's giving me something I haven't seen. When you get into the Netflix Marvel shows, they give me some things I haven't seen, but they're very close to the material that I've read in Daredevil or read with Jessica Jones. There's different themes and there's different things, but that Purple Man saga played out, you know, it's morphed a little bit. But the stuff that I like just love is the stuff that's like original content. In other words, it takes the things that I love with Gotham City and it puts it in an Elseworlds, Titans, and it flips it on its ass and gets violent and dark and does stuff that I haven't seen on Titans. That's the kind of stuff that I gravitate towards. I know people are all different, and I appreciate that we're all different. If we were all the same, things would be boring. There would be all the same comic books being published. But yeah, I've been really surprised. And then the other thing that surprised, well, it kind of didn't surprise me because the preview was so damn good. Barb and I went to go see Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Probably one of my favorite cartoons I've seen on the big screen. Like, I was just blown away. I had goosebumps. I had emotional attachment. I cried a little bit. Yeah, I'm a sissy. Seeing the things that I love on the big screen, if it's really done well, it gives me goosebumps. It makes me feel emotion. It makes me cry out of joy. It makes me cry out of happiness. It makes me cry if there's a sad scene. So yeah, I wear the heart. You know, I'm not afraid to show my emotion, as you've seen on this podcast, you know. But I'm kind of glad because you see people that hide their emotions, and I think things bottle up inside, and that can get rough on some people. Well, it's the holiday season, it's Christmas week. I am going to be off, so that's a great thing. I am going to try to keep exercising because I've decided I need to lose weight. And what the eye opener for me was this, the gout thing, man. It hit me like a bitch. Knocked me on my ass. I couldn't walk. And you know how I love to walk Harley and do stuff. I still hurt by the way of it, but hopefully they put me on allopurinol and hopefully I'll be back up to par, but I'm still exercising in the morning. That's how I got into Krypton. Yeah, and the only downside is I hope I can still exercise during the holidays. There's more sweets, there's more food to eat, and I just have to be disciplined and do what I've been doing, which is kind of carb counting. And the carb counting thing sort of works for me because it lets me have what I want. It just, I can't have a Whopper and a cheeseburger and fries. I have to just eat the Whopper. I drink more water. I eat more fruit. I try not to snack on sweets. And I've been really disciplined for about a week, and it's sort of made me feel better. Like Nick Wetmore was talking about Nerdy Legion, just having like an extra amount of energy, not being so worn out. And that has really worked for me. So I hope in the new year I can be a little healthier than I've been, exercise a little more than I have been, get that heart rate up, and read more comics because I get up in the morning instead of getting stressed out about work. I think I'm going to get up because instead of circling around problems that are in my daily life, I could pop open a comic book and read it, and maybe even go back to bed. I did that for a while, and I stopped doing it. And now I think that makes me more calm. It makes me see things. God, I just love comics. Like I just love the medium so much. Like I just want to share it with you, but I share it with my wife, and sometimes she rolls my eyes. She's saying, "Yeah, but you have too much." And I was like, "You can never have enough," but I don't blame her. I'm coming up with a game plan for that too, like a storage unit for some things. I am going to, yeah, I know it's kind of stupid. Why have all this stuff? But I'm going to make myself a man cave in this damn thing and have an extension of what I need, because I grow my collection. I think, God, what did I calculate? By 16,000 comic books to 2,000 comic books a year. Maybe more, and then another trades, that's got to be like at least 150 a year. And it's a lot of comics. But I like everything, and I don't want to get rid of anything. And I know there's going to be a time when I stop buying comics, you guys, you know that I'm thinking about my death. Okay? It's not because I've ever stopped. It's not because I've ever stopped loving these things. It's just that, God, I want to live forever and read as much comics as I possibly can. And I'm getting old. It's fucking sucks. And seeing my friends and family get older, oh God, it's so rough. Things start to fall apart. But enough of that. It's a time of joy. Some people have the day off. I feel for you guys that are in retail, and those of you that have to work during the holidays, especially the emergency services, police, firemen, hospitals. You guys never really get a break. You guys have to be there. And I appreciate you guys that do that. I don't know how you do it, but you chose those occupations and you do a damn good job at it. And I hope you guys are able to chill out and spend some time off. Even if it's not on a holiday, maybe it's a couple days after the holiday, and just enjoy yourself. Get to go do stuff. But I didn't have hardly any questions, so I'm just gonna wing this sort of episode. Like I sometimes have to wing it, but I did have a few questions, and I will scroll down. I only had two, but one of them's kind of a long question, but it'll be fun to see some of the highlights of the year. Okay, I'm getting there. So, Monica at Moni Bolis, who's the writer of many comics, and she's from Mexico. She writes, "What are my favorite single issues of 2018?" I'm just gonna answer that by telling you what some of my favorite things were of 2018. Because when I rate it a 5 out of 5, that means I absolutely loved it. And I think what you'll see, which is a lot of it, I already re I a lot of the things I love are rereads, or there's something brand new. But it'll be interesting to talk about it, and I think I'm gonna go through it. My favorite single issue, it's a tough call on what that might be, but maybe I can point it out as I go through the list. So, some of the highlights starting at the 1st of January were Number One with a Bullet, Number Two from Image Comics. The odd thing about that was I didn't like Number One. And then this is like the philosophy of don't always count on the number one, but number two started to put the pieces of the puzzle together into a complete story. And once I saw all that and it started to form itself, I absolutely loved it. Strange Adventures 205 to 207. I spent a lot of time in 2017 and 2018 reading Dead Man and just re-exploring Dead Man, and it's been a quite a journey, and I've really loved it because he's one of my favorite characters and he's absolutely fascinating. I would love to see him come to like a TV show. I think he'd work so well in a TV show because he's sort of like the Quantum Leap, where he's going into bodies, taking control of the body and then sort of releasing the body, and he can get into all these situations. Another highlight from DC Comics has been The Wildstorm by Warren Ellis. Absolutely top-notch storytelling. And if you guys read this, I would recommend reading it in chunks because you start to see all these threads. You start to see all this stuff work together, and it's pretty magical. Strange Adventures, I keep stacking that pretty high. Some old stuff, Tales of Suspense, number 74 through 76. That was really good. Doomsday Clock, number 2. I haven't even finished. I stopped reading after 3 because it started coming out late. But Doomsday Clock remains a 5 out of 5 for me every issue. I see things. It's just very craftful. I absolutely love it. Bloodlines, number 1. This was pretty amazing. It was sort of reimagining, reintroducing the characters that were introduced in the Bloodlines annuals that were bitten by the aliens and got powers, such as Loose Cannon and all those characters. Gunfire was one of them. Matter of fact, Gunfire, I think, was killed in Heroes in Crisis. But Bloodlines was a top notch, and I don't know if it just hit me at the right spot. I think it was J.T. Krull. I'd have to look it up. Batman White Knight, another thing that was 5 out of 5. I read a lot of Defenders, the original series, and I just love I love Defenders. There's a couple things that you know I love. OMAC, I love Defenders. I love Daredevil. I love Batman. I love God, there's so much to love. Days of Hate. This is one I didn't plan on getting, but I was blown away by it, by Alice Cott. Really fantastic storyline about two females that are brought back to that sort of separate and they're brought back to life, not life, but to see each other through the eyes of terrorism. The Further Adventures of Nick Wilson, another Image comic book. I thought I was a 5 out of 5. Bloodshot Salvation, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe. There've been some really good Peep Land. That came out early, but I finished it in 2018, and I absolutely loved it. True Crime, The Girl Who Handcuffed It, Houdini, absolutely loved it. And I think with the back matter in this particular book, those two, if you had to tell me single storylines that I loved in 2015, I would go with the Hard Case Crime. Just absolutely loved them. Under was another Titan book. This was probably a European comic converted over. It was a Statix title. White 3 and 4. Some of these are old books, so you just bear with me because I don't read on in a timely fashion. Captain America 444. Days of Hate continued to be really good. 5 out of 5. Barbarella from Dynamite Comics. Punk's Not Dead was a 5 out of 5 for me, at least the first issue. Armstrong and the Vault of Spirits. You'll see a lot of Valiant 5 out of 5. I think it's just quality. Bloodshot Salvation again. Avengers, No Surrender, another 5 out of 5. Absolutely love that storyline. When you put the Collector in there and put it in a contest of champions, absolutely love it. Ninjak with Ninja K. Another 5 out of 5 this year. Shadow Man, the relaunch, another 5 out of 5. So a lot of Valiant being in there. Crossed from Avatar, Wish You Were Here. That was an older one, d released directly to digital, and then they put out in these deluxe format paperback by Simon Spurrier. Cyberforce, 3 through 10. Those were older ones. I read from Image, but I absolutely loved it. Deathbed Number One, that was a Vertigo title. That's a 5 out of 5. Amazing Spider-Man 400 through 401. Absolutely blown away. This is the Clone Saga type stuff. It was the death of MJ, sorry, Aunt May. God, this is so good. A Spectacular Spider-Man, Web of Spider-Man, Spider-Man, all the stuff that had to do with Clone Saga, a lot of it, I rated a 5 out of 5. I thought it was amazing. Aphrodite 1X, which is kind of in that Cyberforce world, absolutely loved it. Oblivion Song Number 1, loved it. Defenders, again, hitting the 5 out of 5s. Heartcourt Legacy, that was Action Lab. Action Comics, Number One. That's the first one. I reread it. Well, actually, I might have read it for the first time in my life and not realized it. Action Comics Number Two. So these are really old stories. You're gonna see a lot of the 5 out of 5s are older stuff. Brave and the Bold Number 98, another old one. An unpublished comic book that was Action Comics that was in the 80th anniversary of Superman. Avengers Ultra Force, that made a 5 out of 5. Again, the Grandmaster, you could see themes. That was the Grandmaster was in this crossover. Stalkers 1 and 2, that was a Marvel Epic collection. That's an older thing. Warlock and the Infinity Watch hit a 5 out of 5. Some older stuff. World of Tanks, that's fairly newer. This is Volume 1. I was blown away by reading this. Really good stuff. Dark Knight's Metal Number 2, I gave a 5 out of 5. But the whole series to me sometimes petered in the 3 area. So that was a very fluctu fluctu it fluctuated a lot for me. Gravedigger, it was an Action Lab, absolutely like crime noir. Contemporary crime noir, I really loved it. Really good action. Action Lab, Danger Zone. Alterna made a 5 out of 5 with the X, that's the 12, the post-apocalyptic book. Some more Amazing Spider-Man by DeFalco and Franz. This is not Clone Saga stuff. I started reading it, absolutely started to fall in love with that. Of course, DeFalco just really clicks with me. The Mall, from Scout Comics. That Barrier, also from Image Comics. Blackhawk, from DC Comics, the around the Mark Evanier era, 248, 252. Strange Adventures, some more Dead Man, Amazing Spider-Man, DeFalco stuff. Friendship Paradox. Monica asked the question, and she made the list of top books of 2018. How about that, Monica? And I'm not bullshitting you because I love you. I'm telling you these books and these back matters, the back matter that you put in issues 4 through 6 was phenomenal. And I'm not telling you that because you're my friend. It hit me. I really loved it. So you made the 5 out of 5s for the year. I hope you listened to it so you could hear your answer. Amazing Spider-Man, Number One. This is the Nick Spencer relaunch. That made a 5 out of 5. I finished off Sword Quest, the Atari book, from Dynamite. Blown away by the whole series, and I've never played Sword Quest. I read Centipede. I want more Atari books. I want more Atari books. And they didn't sell well, unfortunately. Outpost Zero, Number One. Fantastic. Some Tom King, Batman made the list. And Batman 50, the first time I read it didn't strike me, but when I read it a second time, it sort of hit me at the right point. 50 and 51 hit a 5 out of 5 this year. Catwoman, number one. The Aftermath, I really loved. Bionic Woman from Dynamite Comics. Invaders, number one. That's the original series. Punisher Max the Platoon, I finished this year. Oh God, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. The Weatherman from Image Comics, Shanghai Red from Image Comics made the top 5 out of 5s this year. Immortal Hulk from Marvel, that's current stuff that made the top, 5 out of 5s. Generation X, there's some old stuff. I loved rereading some of this. Pestilence, loved it. I think this is the first volume. Gave it a 5 out of 5. Rereading Spawn around the 50s, 50, 51, 52, 55. Actually, not rereading. I was missing these issues and I read it. So that was the first time. Challenges of the Unknown, number 74, made the list. And that's an old one. And I had acquired that on mycomicshop.com, made the list. Something I've never read before, but is an oldie but goodie, is from Atlas Comics, Grim Ghost, Volume 1, 1 through 3 from Atlas Comics. I loved it. Want more? From Aftershock, Unholy Grail, hit made the list. Fantastic Four number 1 relaunch with Dan Slott made the list. Tinseltown made the list from Alterna. Well, Alterna had a couple of 5 out of 5s. Hawkman from DC Comics made the list, the new volume by Venditti. Immortal Hulk just kept remaining high. Batman still from Tom King started to hit high. He fluctuates with me though, man. Oh, does he fluctuate? X-Men Gold number 30 hit a 5 out of 5 for me. Oblivion with the 8 in it from Scout Comics hit a 5 out of 5. Black Badge hit a 5 out of 5. New Challengers. This is a Age of Heroes DC comic hit a 5 out of 5. So that particular week was all 5 out of 5s. We had a couple weeks that just had 4s. Batman, Tom King still remained a 5 out of 5. Almost through 56. Amazing Spider-Man 259. So that now we're going back to the DeFalco stuff and loving it. More Amazing Spider-Man. So you could see like a, I think, man, 50% of this stuff is older stuff. A lot of the Amazing Spider-Man never read before. First time going back and buying more comics from mycomicshop.com. Bully Wars hit a 5 out of 5 from Image Comics. So really loved it. That's new. Secret Six, Volume 2. This is the Gail Simone rereading the mini. Absolutely adore this title, and it remained as a reread. It remained a 5 out of 5. A new one to the list I've never read before, but I've always wanted to read. Dark Mansion of Forbidden Love made a 5 out of 5 this year. Books of Magic, the new launch, made a 5 out of 5. The Wrong Earth from Ahoy Comics made a 5 out of 5. Rereading some Sergeant Rock and Men of War made 5 out of 5s. A Kickstarter made a 5 out of 5. The Skies of Fire, about sky pirates. Another 5 out of 5 was I read this for the first time. I owned all of the Charles Forsman book, but I haven't read The End of the Fucking World. I actually watched the Netflix series first, made a 5 out of 5, even though I think the Netflix series was better than the comic. You don't know, you can't always say that. The first volume of Booster Gold, rereading that, made a 5 out of 5. Villains United, which was the prequel to Secret Six. I started rereading that, made a 5 out of 5. The Wildstorm again. I read another chunk of it. Wow, the Wildstorm struck high at DC this year with me, and I'm not all caught up. Secret Six, the that what else? Nightwing, the new Rebirth title, 50 through 54. Hit a 5 out of 5. This was Rick Grayson and him losing his memory because he was shot in the head in Batman. Men of War continued to remain 5 out of 5s when I kept reading it. The Seven Deadly Sins. This was a Western from TKO Comics, 5 out of 5. And that led us all to the. I hope you enjoyed me reading the list. There was some Image, there was some DC, there was some Marvel, mostly old. That made it a 5 out of 5. There was so that I hope that answers your question, Monica. And you made the list. How about that? Your first issues weren't didn't hit with me, but when I hit issue 4, I absolutely start they your first few issues were like a 4 out of 5 for me, but when I hit issue 4 through 6, it just hit a stride with me, like it just worked. And I haven't read 7 yet. Well, I'm gonna probably read that over the holidays. So I hope that answers your question, Monica. I absolutely loved 4 through 6. The other ones I liked very much, but 4 through 6 are the ones that knocked me on my ass and said, "Gotta take note, gotta take note. This is really good stuff." What else? We had one more question. Hopefully, I didn't lose my spot. This is from Dudes on a Map. Have you ever been embarrassed to purchase a book at an LCS due to content or a cover? He said recently a friend and him were curious about a natural from Image Comics, but due to the covers, have passed on it. But they ended one his friend ended up breaking. Well, Unnatural has some like sexually. I don't know, but it's a pig girl too. So I but I have never had a problem with like the natural to me is like a is nothing like compared to some of the stuff I've gotten in the past. I get comics from Boundless and they're triple X books for the most part. Crossed is pretty doggone bad, but I there's something about it that I don't think it is as X-rated. It's just the nature of the book. Let's see, what else did I get in the past? Oh, the only ones that I got like in college that were kind of racy and dirty were Rambaugh, which was an Arrows comic, I think. And the Faust. So I have experience, but I didn't have problem getting them. I don't know why, but when I got those, that was at an LCS, but I picked those up. Maybe it's because at that store they had porn too, so I don't know. Maybe I wasn't embarrassed because it had both. So I would go get them off the shelf. But as far as racy stuff, I don't consider Image racy. Yeah, there might be some covers, but I'm never embarrassed to get anything or discuss it for that matter. I think our society, I think Europe and stuff has it right because sex is it's something that we as Americans consider embarrassing or shy away from, but sex is not that big of a deal in Europe and other countries, and it really shouldn't be. I don't, it's something that people do to procreate or not procreate, to have a good time. I mean, and I guess I've never been embarrassed to purchase the book. But I've also don't go to like strange places to purchase book. I like know the shop owners like really well, almost through my whole career. And then DCBS, you don't really No, other than the person that's packing your books sees, oh wow, they're getting boundless. So, to answer your question, no, I'm not embarrassed. And I'm not embarrassed to like hide it from my wife or family either. Like, I don't want my nieces and nephews to see that shit. But as far as my mom and dad, pff, I care less. As far as Barb saying it, I don't care. I don't know. But these were good questions because it was fun to go through these, even though I only had a handful. I'm glad I got them. So one of the things I wanted to go back and find my Wizard magazines downstairs, but I couldn't find the ones I wanted. I wanted the older ones. But recently I was the last episode I got to talk about I got a text message. That's weird. All right. My prescription has shipped. That's good. Sorry about that. So you get me as me on this show. And I don't cut out the ums because I talk like that anyway. Well, I'm talking to myself and I'm lazy to edit. So some people like edit the shit out of everything. I like more natural stuff, like when people don't care. Because then I know I'm getting them. I really do. I don't know. Just the nature of my listening. When things are so refined and they put in clips in between and do all that stuff, it's cool. And I think early on in my podcast listening, I preferred those podcasts. But as I grow older and I don't know, I tend to navigate to more personable podcasts that don't really care or don't have segments and just naturally segue into things, and you never know what you're gonna get. I kind of like that. I don't even know how I started to talk about that, but I was able to get a Wizard magazine from 2008, and I think this is a towards the end of their life. And I thought I'd go over some things in the hot, what was hot back then in 2008. But the indie buzz was on Aqualung. I don't even know what that is, and nor do I did I get it. Classic comics spelled with a K Club hardcover. These are indie buzzes. I never heard of that. Jim Butcher's The Dresden Files, Welcome to the Jungle. I did hear about that. I did play around with the Dabble Brothers Productions, but I don't think I bought the Dresden Files. I bought other stuff. Glamour Puss, I remember what that is. That's a Cerebus creator Dave Sim. I remember that one. I didn't buy it, but I remember it. Little Things, A Memoir of Slices by Touchstone Comics. And Haunted Hardcover from John and Quarterly. I've never heard of that either. So the only two I've heard of is the Dresden Files and Glamour Puss, and I don't own either one of them. So that goes to show what I knew about what's hot in indie comics. More in the real world, what's hot now? Jigsaw was hot back then. He's the villain, the Punisher villain. They were seeing movement on Amazing Spider-Man 162, Punisher Warzone film, because of the Punisher Warzone film that was released, and Jigsaw was in it. I liked that film. Matter of fact, I'm gonna tell you right now, I liked all the Punisher films, even the Dolph Lundgren one. I liked them all. I'm not. I am so easy to please because I treat my entertainment as entertainment, and if it takes me away from reality or makes my mind forget about all the stresses in life, I just enjoy stuff. So that's what was hot. Skrull covers were hot for some reason. The Skrull homage covers. Mighty Avengers 12, New Avengers number 40, Secret Invasion number 1, Supernatural Origins was hot when the comic book came out from the TV show. X-Men Divided We Stand, Dark Tower Comics Gunslinger hardcover was hot. World of Warcraft from Wildstorm was hot. And DC Nation, Wonder Woman number 14, Wildstorm Revelations number 1. So those are some of the things that were listed as hot. They also said a treasure hunt. They have that was under the section called Movers and Shakers. And then they had an article called Treasure Hunt. And this was like find it cheap for now, and they recommended Wolverine 1996, so that's like an annual. And this had Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness. What else does it have? They were saying they're making a name with themselves on Superman and Superman, Batman, DC. I don't know. It says it's scarce to find. I don't think I own that one. Matter of fact, a lot of the annuals I didn't, and the fact that it's Marvel, I've jumped in and out of. The Hot Comics. Now, this is interesting. The number one is Amazing Spider-Man 549. David Finch cover was at the top. At number two, the Ultimates number three. Number two, Michael Turner variant. At number three, this one's I've been trying to track down. I've been trying to get all the Michael Myers Halloween covers because of my namesake. But this is Halloween Night Dance number one with a Bill Sienkiewicz cover. That was hot. So a lot of these are variants. This one I don't think is a variant, but it's the Captain America number 34 Alex Ross cover. Amazing Spider-Man 546 Brian Hitch variant of A Brand New Day, the Hulk number one Daniel Acuña variant. So I guess what you could get about these is a lot of the books that are hot today by speculators are hot back then in 2000. What was this? 2000. Where did I say it was? 2008, May of 2008. They're variants that are hot. Daniel Acuña Red Hulk variant was hot. Okay, this one is just flat out hot for being itself, and you probably find it in a nickel, a dime bin or 25 cent. Freddy versus Jason from Wildstorm Comics versus Ash. Angel After the Fall variant, so Tony Harris cover, Worlds of Warcraft from Wildstorm, a Jim Lee cover, and New X-Men number 44. So I think of all the books they listed, all of them were variants except for three. So that is pretty interesting. Going back in the Wayback Machine, the Hot 10 writers, Brian Michael Bendis was number one. I think you could say that he still is sort of in this top 10 with what he's doing at DC Comics. Maybe not number one, but I think he'd be in the top 10. Mark Millar, still very prolific, signed a deal with Netflix. He was number two. Jeff Loeb was number three. Jeff Loeb, you see his name on a lot of the Marvel TV shows. I think the last time I saw his name was Cloak and Dagger. Number four, Josh Whedon. Whedon, because he was doing Serenity back then. He was hot. Frank Miller was hot for All-Star Batman. God, I wish they finished All-Star Batman and Robin. I thought it was fantastic. Jeff Johns was number six from Action Comics, Booster Gold. Green Lantern Justice Society of America. He's probably still hot with Doomsday Clock, I would think. It's in the top 10 sellers. And now he's doing Shazam, so I would think he would still remain in the top. So of the top 10 back then, I think Bendis and Geoff Johns could still remain there. Grant Morrison for All-Star Superman and Batman. He might still be there for some people, not for me, but he's writing Green Lantern, so he's still there. Ed Brubaker's putting out Criminal again, but he was hot for Captain America, Criminal, Daredevil, Uncanny X-Men. Brian K. Vaughan for Ex Machina and Logan. He's still very prolific. He's taking a break from Saga. Robert Kirkman, still prolific with Walking Dead. That was the top 10 writers. Let's look at the top 10 artists and see where they are. Brian Hitch was number one for Fantastic Four. Ed McGuinness for Hulk. Jim Lee for All-Star Batman and Robin. Joe Madureira for Ultimates 3. Lionel Yu for Secret Invasion. His art really started to grow on me. Jim Chung from New Avengers. Ethan Van Sciver. Wow, he's been political with his stuff lately, but he was hot for Justice League of America. Frank Quitely was hot for All-Star Superman. Gary Frank for Action Comics. And John Romita Jr. for Kick-Ass. So those is taking you on a flashback. The indie gems went to The Goon. Well, this is interesting. I didn't know The Goon was published through Avatar, but it says Avatar Press, 1999. Hard to find small press books. Oh, that'd be interesting. Maybe I should seek that out. I know I have a lot of Goon, but most of the Goon I have is in collected editions until like later on in life. Top five covers that were hot, that were over 5 years old. Batman the Killing Joke, Brian Bolland cover. Uncanny X-Men 266, I think it's the first appearance of Gambit. I own that too. Batman the Man Who Laughs was hot. Was that a Bolland cover? I think so. I own that. Watchmen number one was hot. And G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero 155 was hot. So, of those, I own four of them. And you might be surprised what I don't own, but I don't own Watchmen and singles. I own a trade paperback, and I also own the Absolute, but I didn't own the singles. They're probably getting hot now, too, because of the HBO series that's coming out. Let's see if there's anything else that's interesting. Weird but True Comic Book Oddities, Saved by the Bell, Summer Break from Harvey Comics. That's interesting. That might be interesting to seek out for me. So that was kind of fun. What some of the things, like, you don't see these articles anymore, but some of the things they featured in this magazine were faces and places. They showed people pictures. One thing about magazine, the Wizard magazine, that was kind of nice is they would show you pictures of the creators. So if you're ever at a con, you know what they look like. There's something about TV, 24, a bunch of Battlestar Galactica stuff, Heroes, Smallville, Supernatural. Back in There was a jail back the movie movement, like things that might happen. Well, G.I. Joe did happen. Star Trek, J.J. Abrams, that did happen. JLA at that time didn't happen. That took a while to come out. The Boys was going to Hollywood and it didn't, but now it is again. That's so funny. That is so. And then they always did the thing that I didn't like was the. What if we were to cast a G.I. Joe movie? This is who would you cast? I never cared for that dream casting, because you don't know until you see it. They talked about homage covers, Five Questions with Peter David. They talked about Fall Out Boy, Steve Gerber and Memram. He passed away at 60, so there's a little article about that. One of my favorite writers of all time with the Defenders. They do toy stuff. That was pretty cool. I like that. A video game section. They talk about a geeky type. They had something on Cloverfield, the movie. Tech gadgets, the OptiBook 3600. Watch and learn, all the different watches that you could get. Those are weird looking. My favorite covers from Ed McGuinness of all time. This is kind of interesting for some of you, anyway. He says Giant Size X-Men was one of his favorite covers. Amazing Spider-Man 129. Incredible Hulk 377, a Dale Keown cover. Avengers King Size Special was a John Buscema cover. Legends of the DC Universe was a Steve Rude cover. Ooh, that one's nice. I own that one. Silver Surfer number 4, which is the Thor fighting Silver Surfer. That was a John Buscema cover. You could see he's influenced by John Buscema. Avengers King Size Special. That was a John Buscema cover. Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man. This was the deluxe format by Ross Andrew. So that tells you some of his covers. There was a Q&A with Robert Downey Jr. Now you see all that stuff, kind of stuff online. Secret Invaders, about Secret Invasion and all the Skrull stuff. That's what was hot back then. Brian Hitch, talked to Brian Hitch. Talked to Tim Roth about Incredible Hulk, that movie that was coming out. Speed Racer, the T that was a good movie, man. A Peter Tomasi article about Nightwing. A Simon and Kirby about Captain America that was going way. This one I might want to read now. Some Hellboy article. Justice League breakdowns. Well, these are series that are coming up. So yeah, it had a lot of interesting things. Judd Winnick interview. Just giving you a flashback of Wizard from 2008. I really wish I would have kept every single Wizard magazine, but for some reasons I didn't treat them like comics. And I've changed my philosophy about Wizard and previews. I think they offer such. I love to go look at these things from the past and see what was hot then and what comics were coming out years later. I started to re-get my keep my previews, and I used to treat it as disposable in a Wizard too. And I went on eBay and I bought some old Wizards, and I gotta go find them because they are really amazing. Just an amazing slice of history. So I think that's it for this year. I want to thank you for listening. I am going to be back with the weekly reads if I can get through them tonight. I'm going to try to do another 3 weeks. So I will talk to you in a bit, and thank you. All right, and we are back. We're going to talk about books, which are November 5th through November 11th of this year, 2018. I'll start at the bottom. We had a total of 34 comics read that week. One Titan, six Marvel, four Kickstarters. Wow. IDW, one Fantagraphic, 19 DC, one Chaos Comics, and one Atlas. Good distribution that week. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s, which mean I liked them. This was the one Kickstarter that looked better than it turned out, and it was because it was driven by art more than story, and I'm more of a story guy, and it's in a magazine format, but it's called Cauldron. It's a Kickstarter with three stories. The first one was about a king's heart. The second one was about a knight going to rescue his love, but finds out she is a monster, but she protects him. And the last is about a city whose factories produce so much pollution and sludge and death that it manifests itself as a monster, kind of like a kaiju, and goes after the owner of the factory. That one's probably the best story. My favorite was the last one, but I give it a 3 out of 5 as a whole. One of the highlights of this Kickstarter was the cover. It looks, I don't know, like retro, creepy, or those kind of magazines, and I really liked it. Sorry, but I gotta go get something to drink again because that's the way I am. I need to drink and talk. Just drinking water this time instead of a Dr. Pepper 10. The next book is 3 out of 5 is Nightwing 29. This was most of the Nightwings were in the 4 out of 5s and 5 out of 5s, but this was in the 3 out of 5s. It was a Dark Knight Metal tie-in with the Suicide Squad and Titans. It kind of interrupted the story momentum for me, and I didn't really care for metal that much, so this little one-shot tie-in, it didn't do much for me. But I liked it. It was good enough. But ahead of that, 3 out of 5 was Sonic the Hedgehog number 2. Okay, this is my second exposure to Sonic comics. I never even played the video game, but it's Sonic and Amy have to protect a town from super Badniks. And if I say something wrong, it's because I'm not a video game smart on the Sonic Hedgehog. Amy tries to get Sonic to join the resistance, and Eggman still believed to be dead. It was interesting enough. I felt like I knew the world. They introduced me in number one to the world, and it's kind of a light read, and I kind of enjoyed it. We have World War X from Titan Comics number 4. The ex-husband, wife, and alien superhero try to find a way to take out the aliens. The woman alien releases many more aliens. So if you're into sci-fi, you might like this one. This one rated a 3 out of 5, which means I liked it. The next 3 out of 5 is a Grant Morrison book. It's Green Lantern number 1 relaunch. Two Green Lanterns apprehended by a space spider at a casino. He is put on a ship with three prisoners bound for Oa. Hal is back on Earth with the love interest. A lantern crashes and dies and gives him his lantern because Hal is being repaired. His is being repaired on Oa. He rep. I don't even know what I wrote there. But he captured these, reapprehended these criminals. Two lanterns are now dead, and they may be related to the antimatter universe villain. It looks like there's an antimatter version of Hal being put together. It was decent enough. The art was good. It told a complete story. I understood what was going on. It just was a step back from what was there previously, in my opinion. I was liking it more. Batman 58. I gave a 4 out of 5 too. I said it was jarring because I thought the Penguin got shot in the head by Red Hood, and it seems like he made an absolute recovery very fast, kind of like Nightwing. Just like these recoveries, like within months, and it just seems like weeks. I don't know. It's just weird. He did have like a black patch over his eye, so maybe it was just shown artistically, but there was like no mention or physical artistic show anything shown of what happened in Red Hood and the Outlaws. And the more I read these DC books, it seems like they don't have as tight a they're it's almost like they're free to do their own thing in every book. I mean, yes, there's things going on, like Nightwing was shot and it's happened in his book, but they just seem a little more decoupled, like they have more freedom to do stuff and not as much implication that you would see in the past. Penguin buries a loved one, Penny Cobblepot, who may have been his daughter. The first appearance, Interesting, Penny Cobblepot. But first appearance and then a death. The scene with Bane is hard to tell when it happened in the story. It looks like the Penguin is out to kill Alfred, but then calls off the hit. So that rated a 4 out of 5, which means I really liked it. But it was kind of jarring to see the Penguin just alive and well so fast. It's like it never even happened. Nightwing 30 and 40, 30 through 40 made a 4 out of 5. This is Nightwing teams up with Blockbuster. This is the end of Tim Seeley's run to try to take out Raptor and the Pigeon. Pigeon is in love with the Raptor. Raptor torturing Dick and gets a hold of Blockbuster virus to spread throughout Bloodhaven. With the help of the Defacer and crew, they are able to defeat Raptor, who is left broken after Blockbuster punches him. Then we get an ongoing battle with the Judge. Okay, the creative teams turned on changed on this with the Judge arc, who has been around since Dick was Robin in Bloodhaven. He is killing so many to try to destroy the casinos that are in Bloodhaven, and seems to have a power of suggestion because he makes people kill themselves. The Judge goes after the casino owners. I think he is the father that killed his family when his child died and is seeking revenge. Nightwing still after the Judge. He finds the casino owner with a bomb and it goes off, and it looks like Nightwing died in the blast. But we know that didn't happen. But I really enjoyed the Nightwing books by Tim Seeley, and I think Sam Humphries took over from there from that point. Demon Hell in Hell. I should get that right. It might not be Sam Humphries because there was two creative team changes on Nightwing pretty fast. So let's go into Comic Base, which I just renewed for $99 for the year. So Ben Percy, so the writer of Green Arrow, wrote those issues with the Judge. Sam Humphries came after, so we'll talk about that in a few. From DC Comics, a new Demon comic is Demon Hell on Earth. Jason Blood is in a small town and he keeps having dreams of having to protect a girl. That actually happens and he has to turn into the demon to protect the girl, and it stars Madame Xanadu. We then get into a Chaos comic. This was sent to me as a freebie when I bought some comics from Reed. Very surprised to see this one was written by Joshua Dysart. Bad Kitty is being chased by the FBI but manages to get a letter to her parents saying she is being framed and she is looking after them. While taking the subway, she runs across a little girl. That girl is being attacked by a nun and later a werewolf. She manages to save the child even though the train crashes. Chastity shows up and states they have to protect the child. I enjoyed it. And it was a freebie. I then get into something I didn't think I would enjoy, and I think I mentioned this in prior episodes, but now we're here. Gwenpool number 0, 1, and 2. I think it's called The Unbelievable Gwenpool as a whole. Gwenpool is a comic fan like you and me that gets sucked into the Marvel Universe. She knows the rules of comic books and everyone's identity. In the first issue, she recruits her computer Oracle, who is a thief but is later killed. He becomes a character as a ghost in the future. Zero is being reprinted from the holiday special, where she steals a box from the Black Cat to sell to Hydra. The adventure involves Howard the Duck, and he is hired to get the black box from Gwenpool. MODOK hires her to steal a powerful god from a police custody with Batroc the Leaper and others to have, and then to have a run-in with Thor, which is Jane Foster Thor. Really liked that one. I then read I read that on Marvel Unlimited, so that was all digital. I don't own the physical copies of Gwenpool. I didn't think I would like it, but I did. Witches number 1 and 2. These books I don't own, but I am gonna order them. But these are Marvel. Jennifer Kale's brother uses the Book of Magic to release a demon that consumes all magic users. Doctor Strange has to assemble a team of witches to fight a threat. Satana, Topaz, and Jennifer Kale I really like this book, and I tweeted about this, and it caused some interesting replies. And one guy said this was a continuity nightmare, which I enjoyed the hell out of this story. But he pointed me to another, I think it was an Epic collection that talks about one of these characters, and I did put it on my new mycomicshop.com order. We then get into a book that I haven't received physically at Kickstarter, but I read it digitally. This is a Kickstarter where they sent me the digital copies before the Kickstarter was funded, which I really appreciated. This was The Empties 1 and 2. A story opens up with some kind of outbreak. Then we cut to an older man that works at a restaurant, and he's finally paid off his house and wants to surprise it with his wife. He goes home early and finds his wife is leaving him, and there is a guy in the house. He destroys the guy's car. The woman then starts getting sick and projectile vomiting. And then the husband calls 911, but they can't come out because of the outbreak. So a lot of people are being infected. This issue really worked for me. The art was fantastic. The Kickstarter was fantastic. It got fully funded. I asked people on Geek Brunch to try to help. I hope some of you did. And if you did, I really appreciate it because I really wanted this book to come to fruition. I really like it. And I like the video that the woman put out, and it was written as like a horror book on relationships, and I like where it's going. And they were based on truth. Some stuff happened to her, and she wrote this horror novel around it. I don't know how much is real and how much is not, but it makes for a very interesting story. So when I get the physical copies, it'll be interesting to see how they look. I probably won't read it again, but I'll have the physical copies to go along with it. I'll probably read it again at some point when the story finishes because I liked it so much. I hope they get started on that stuff. I hope it's not one that just hangs out there. I hope it finishes. So that was a 4 out of 5. Savage Combat Tales was a 4 out of 5. We get into some war comics. Sergeant Stryker is in Africa, and the Nazis are after his group. He never killed anyone before because his father taught him to cherish life. He is told by his girlfriend to protect her brother, but he can't because that would require him to take a life. With his unit killed, he rescues 4 soldiers that are being court-martialed, and they make up the death squad to manage to kill these Nazis. Sergeant Stryker makes his first kill. The second story is about a pilot that gets bounty from the Chinese for every Japanese zero he takes down. He is in it for the money and does not care about his own unit. When he is shot down in China, he thinks he is safe because he's shooting Japanese zeros for China, so he thinks he's safe in China. But he's found by a group that's in China making money from the Japanese for every pilot they kill. So it's kind of like the opposite. So the Chinese are selling these American pilots or pilots that are fighting the Zeros to the Japanese the same sort of way that this pilot was sell the irony of the situation. You get it. But that was from Atlas Comics. It was a very good number one issue. I think there's only 3 issues. We have the 5 out of 5s, which I've kind of already talked about in this episode, but you're going to get it again. The End of the Fucking World. What I put on this is I didn't get into details because I watched the series. I encourage you guys to go to the Netflix and watch this. Give it that first issue and then one more issue to at least decide if you like it, because these characters are very unlikable, but the building of them is really important. He's good at building the characters, but there was nowhere near the world building that was done in the Netflix original. For the TV, they changed quite a bit, and it was for the better, in my opinion, especially with the detectives and the main pervert being killed. What I mean by that is in the TV show, they made these detectives, these 2 female detectives in the story. In the comic book, one of the female detectives was related to the guy they killed. They like broke into a house and stayed there, and they find out this guy was killing teenagers and other girls. And when he came back to the house, he threatened the one girl that was there. And the main character killed that guy because he knew he was dangerous because he found all the film footage. Well, in the TV show, it makes it believe that he killed several people, but in like some kind of satanic ritual, and the detective was related to that because she was in the cult and she was after the two teenagers. So that was different. In the comic book, the two detectives were two lesbian detectives that used to have a relationship but had to work together. And yeah, it was quite different. We got Skies of Fire hardcover. It's Sky Pirates and Airship. Beautiful book. Hardcover, by the way. Airships to destroy a well-known port and kill a lot of people. So these pirates slaughtered a lot of people, and the king is pissed at one of the ports. He assigns one of his officers, a female officer, to go after the pirates into the unknown. It's like the unknown zone. She gets a criminal and his sailors to help. They go into a fight because of an aggressive fighter pilot before entering the Forbidden Zone. In other words, this fighter pilot caused them to fight another place, another area that's outside of the kingdom that they really didn't want to fight with because he was just gun crazy. Amazing story, very steampunkish, Zeppelins fighting in the sky, having fighter pilots off of the Zeppelins. It was pretty amazing. We got Men of War 1 through 3. This is from DC Comics. Ulysses Hazard was a kid that had polio. He overcame all that to become an elite military officer, only to find out he's giving meaningless tasks and is a World War II grave digger. And these grave diggers really did exist, and their jobs were to go after, like, they stormed the beach to get the bodies out of the way. So when the next set of military people arrived in those boats that I forget what those boats are called, but they're like boats that have all the soldiers pretty much standing, and then the drawbridge drops, and then they all come running out. So he's part of the gravedigger unit. After his friend sacrifices his life for a lieutenant, for a racist lieutenant, he goes AWOL because he's just pissed, and he's pissed off, and he wants to fight back, but they won't let him. So he actually goes back to the States at the Pentagon to plead his case. And the one guy's realized his abilities and gives him the name Gravedigger and promotes him to captain. But this guy that did it is very malicious. Like, he's got that weird smirk on his eye, like he's going to use him to do stuff. He goes back and stops a tank embedded in a mountain that was killing a lot of our soldiers. He has another run-in with the racist lieutenant, and he used him to get credit for taking the mountain. Enemy Ace is haunted by a fighter, and the second story is an Enemy Ace story. He is haunted by a fighter with a wild boar on his head. He thinks he keeps killing him, but he really is the enemy, using different pilots to play a psychological warfare with the Enemy Ace's mind. And what I mean by that is, Enemy Ace thinks he's knocking this guy out with the wild boar, and then he appears again, and then he shoots it down again. And he's like, I keep killing the same guy, but they're really psychologically dressing up the plane and everything else to look the same, to play mind games with the enemy ace because they know he's such a great fighter. So good psychological warfare there. But 5 out of 5, absolutely loved it. And the last 5 out of 5 is Sergeant Rock 356. Sergeant Rock always does the scouting for all his men, and he uses all his senses to detect danger. In this case, he saved his men because he used his sense of smell to detect a Nazi smoking in a tank and defeat him. A captain witnessed. I'm gonna have to pause real quick because my wife just got home. And I'm back. And you probably think these sound familiar because I did talk about them. But what I'll just summarize them real quick instead of going into the details. A captain comes and chews their asses because Sergeant Rock is actually doing things that he should have his soldiers underneath him do, because he's the leader and they don't want him to get killed and then him not being able to command his soldiers. So he gets his ass chewed and he leaves a lieutenant behind to make sure he does his job. And so he sends out scouts, short round and bulldozer, and they get captured. They go into this town and there's people there that look like French people that have guns underneath. And then there's Nazis on the top. And what short round and bulldozer managed to, one of them manages to knock a German off the building by, he's tied up, but pushes him off and they realize what's going on. They have a battle. And, that lieutenant comes back and says, Sergeant Rock's men know what they're doing. Sergeant Rock knows what he's doing. And, it's really awesome. And then there was a two-page story that states what makes Rock a great soldier, a page that talks about the one story that I talked about in grave detail was the one about Nobody, and I absolutely loved it. It was a guy that Rock never gave a name to. He didn't have time to do it, and this guy went into a foxhole with a bar gun, BAR. And he had the automatic rifle, and there was heavy fire that night. And that one soldier, he prevented all the Nazis from killing his own men. He was just there. And then when they found his body, he was just draped over his gun, dead. And man, it just brought tears to my eyes. I absolutely loved it. But you heard that before. So let's get into November 12th through November 18th. There were 17 comics, one Waxwork, five Marvel, one Kickstarter, three Image, one IDW, two Dynamite, two DC, one Charlton, one Aftershock. We'll start with the 3 out of 5s. I wanted to like this one more, but I did like it. This is a fictional story that is supposed to tell the history of some experiences that Chaykin had in comics. But it kept time jumping and made me lose track of who was who and what I was supposed to be getting out of it. I also found myself getting distracted with these characters because some of them looked alike, and knowing who they really were, and then my mind was racing to try to find out who their real counterparts were, and it was distracting. I was hoping that reading I hope that reading subsequent issues clears up things for me personally, and I like it more than I did. Then getting to the 4 out of 5s, Billy the Kid, I didn't expect to like, but it was a Justin Gray Kickstarter. I support everything he does. I think he's an amazing writer. It had really good art about like rabbits. Like if you ever read Peter Rabbit or any of those stories and like books when you were a kid, it had that kind of art style. It came really across. But a sick kitten is trying to get over his sickness and prays to God. He's like, please help me. His family is having a huge party when a tornado hits and slaughters everyone in his family. He does seem to get better and seeks revenge with the help of a goat. Later, he destroys one tornado from destroying a town, but it is not the same one that killed his family. So it's like a rabbit versus a tornado. And I think I got an email from him that the second issue is coming out soon, to keep an eye out for it if you're into the story. And you read the first one, you might want to keep an eye out for the second one. X-Men Blue 18 and 19. The X-Men run into Generation X and have a battle with them before realizing they're not at the mansion, but Emma made it look like a facade as they are living in the destruction. They then end up going back to visit the younger selves and fighting alongside with Magneto. They are really fighting an evil group of mutants disguised as their younger selves. So that was a cool story. I like Gold better at this point, but we'll see how that ends up. X-Men War, I don't own physically. I was reading on Marvel Unlimited 1 and 2. Jean Grey is found dead, but the cops don't care because it is a mutant. A new detective is working to solve this particular crime. It's not welcomed by his fellow police because they don't want anything about they don't want anything to do with mutants. And Magneto runs into the current X-Men. The X-Men and the detective are working to find out how to take on Magneto because they believe he killed Jean. Cyclops runs into Wolverine, and Jean did not have the three lashes across her back, or did have the three lashes across her back, so he looks guilty. But this is very much like crime noir. I think they came out with Spider-Man Noir. He's in the movie, by the way, and other noir books. And I wanted to see what these were because I never read them and enjoyed it. Barbarella, number 3 and 4, the conclusion to a guy who's trying to destroy all facilities for breeding, yeah, sexual breeding and making babies. Barbarella manages to stop him. The other adventure is a company that helps create worlds. An empath is a representative of the company. Barbarella has sex with them and then finds out he is responsible for destroying some of the technology of the planets. The group captures him and Barbarella is off to another adventure. So that's kind of like an interim story between the next story arc. Cemetery Beach, from Image Comics. Two prisoners in the future manage to escape a prison. One might be from Earth. The main warden finds out and panics that he may return to Earth. That was a Warren Ellis story. I really liked it. 4 out of 5. We've got Poser number 1 from Waxworks Comics. A young man wants to be liked by a punk rock gang, but they just tease and tease him until he cracks and kills two of them, and that happens in the past. Cut to the future, there's a punk rock groom scene 10 years later, but there is another murder at a concert. They focus on a female punk singer from a band, she's the main character, that broke the band up, who works for her father at a record store. And the one person that was killed at that concert when they were kind of having like a reunion, but it was just a one night thing. They kind of like were pestering her to come and sing with another band on stage. So she went on stage to sing. And while that was happening, they heard a huge scream in a bathroom. And another girl, one of their friends that I think was in the band, was actually murdered by this character called the Poser. So that's from Waxworks Comics. We have Scary Tales number 1 from Charlton Comics. The first story is about a married couple that has a female caretaker that is a vampire. She tries to turn the husband and wife against each other. She dies in the end. The second story is the origin story of Cantus von Blude, the host of the comic book. That's the hostess of this comic book, kind of like Tales from the Crypt. She introduces the stories. We have Edge of Spider-Geddon number 3. Spider-Ben and Spider-Pete have adventures, and he loses May and Pete and still has to be a hero as an old man. I really like this one. Of the Edge of Spider-Geddons, this was my favorite so far. We then finished Witches number 3 and 4. Doctor Strange battles Lilith. Jennifer Kale, Satana, and Topaz defeat Satana's father and her brother. They have to kill Jennifer's brother in the process. Doctor Strange then demands the book, but they all give him the middle finger, and they say, "We're keeping the book." And I don't know if anything happened in Doctor Strange that finished the story, but I really, God, it's beautiful. It's Didotto artwork, and it's amazing. It looks amazing. I like the story. Some of the people that I tweeted didn't like the story, but I did. Batman the Max. You know what's interesting about this Witches story is this writer never did anything. I don't know where he came from, but he came and wrote this story. His name was Brian Patrick Walsh, and he had Mike Diodato artwork on 1 and 2, and then Will Conrad on 3 and 4. And it was just a beautiful book. I really liked it a lot. Matter of fact, I'm gonna add that, even though I read it digitally, I'm adding the physical copies. Batman the Max, Arkham Dreams number 1 from IDW. Batman finds the Max homeless, talking about the Outback. Batman takes him to Arkham, where the doctor puts them both under, and they are now in the Outback, and things are very different in the Outback. The Jungle Queen Julie is even very different. Mr. Nunn is not there. Batman and the Max have to figure out what is going on. So this doctor at Arkham seems to be a culprit. Exorcisters number 1 from Image Comics. A man and a woman are at the altar, and a demon takes the husband to hell before they can actually get married. The exosisters are hired by the woman that lost her husband to find out why he's not there. They find him in one of the houses the woman cannot sell, with a demon that was feeding off his wife's misery and earning money. He never really loved her. They were both realtors, to sell houses and stuff, and he was in one of their houses, just making bank off of her suffering. And the demon is now feeding off of the misery because all the money vanished. So they sort of destroyed the money, and now the guy's miserable because the money was destroyed. And then the demon started feeding off the husband, or the to-be husband. It was a very interesting story with Archie, like our artwork, and I really dug it from Image Comics. Another 4 out of 5 was Clan Killers number 2. The one daughter is trying to find out how to take out every clan in the evil kingdom, including her father. The king actually chases her down, but she gets away with the help of banshees, and they're like huge banshees. They're almost like 10 times the size of a normal person. They defeat a headless Irishman and recruit him to the cause. They run into the vampire clan. The father finds the sisters talking about their mother, and the king beats them. And those are her sisters, so those are the king's daughters. He's treating them like crap, his own daughters. Really like that story. That's from Aftershock. We then get into Booster Gold, Volume 1, 1 and 2. Booster is so popular that he has an agent and a secretary in Metropolis. This is Volume 1, by the way. So Dan Jurgens is creation. I'm rereading this. I reread it for DC Spotlight. He is a walking commercial and is setting his own terms for his movie franchise. An organization has stole his fingertips to try and identify who he is. And what I mean, they don't actually cut off his fingertips. They get his fingerprints off of something to try to figure out who Booster Gold is. Blackguard and Mindbender was working for the 100, and they steal some satellite payload, and Mindbender gets the best of Booster in front of live footage. She takes the payload to the 100, and they ask to break Blackguard out of prison so he can be punished. They get into another fight during the skirmish, and Skeets might be destroyed at the end of issue 2. So that was fun. That was a total of 17 comics again. We then get into the final week, a total of 32 comics. A lot of them were just a lot of quantity of books, because this isn't a big list. We'll start with the 3 out of 5. I was so anxious to read Mr. Miracle 12 because it was the deciding factor of whether I liked it or not. I gave it a 3 out of 5, which means I liked it, but I wanted it to be a 4 out of 5 or a 5 out of 5. And the reason I didn't like it is because it really didn't have a resolution. It left the reader to determine if Scott escapes this thing. Not saying there will be other adventures, and there will be other adventures, and he can escape whenever he wants. Kind of like a backhanded to the face of the comic book fan, if you ask me. I didn't like it. Whereas somebody that likes pretentiousness, it might say, "Ooh, I like that. It's very different." I chose my own ending where Dr. This is my ending. I chose my ending where Dr. Bedlam has Scott in a trap and he does not want to leave. He tells the reader he can escape at any time, but this is his paradise with him and his family, so he chooses not to escape because he wants to have his kids and he wants to be with Barda, so he chooses to stay here. It's like a drug addict, but he can't escape. But he says I can escape anytime he wants. That's how I interpreted it. And some of the people that I asked for to give me answers back, I think, let's see, Ronnie Barron of Nerdy Legion replied and said he interpreted the same way I did. And so did Drew from Comics for Fun and Profit. So we're sort of making our own endings, and we had similar opinions of this. I don't know how Ronnie felt about it overall. I do know Drew liked it more than I did. So that's all I could say about it. I gave it a 3 out of 5, which means I just liked it. Now, things I really liked were 4 out of 5, and X-Men Blue 20, the X-Men defeat the evil Charles Xavier and his group, and think they have restored the time stream, but it is still way off. We then get into Generation X number 6. Emma and the team rescue Artie and Leech from the Morlocks. We then get into the Wildstorm, Michael Cray, 5 through 12. Michael Cray takes down an Aquaman being in this particular Wildstorm universe and finds out Constantine is bringing in a machine that will bring Wonder Woman's gods into our world and destroy life as we know it. Michael is seeing the alien that is now part of him. He captures Constantine and kills Wonder Woman. He is now a rogue in this war. We then get into the unbelievable Gwenpool, 3 through 10. Gwen defeats MODOK and launches him into space, so he is deemed by the leader. So she is deemed by the to be the leader of the gang, the new leader. She has a three-parter where she teams up with Miles Morales and tries to shoot a kid making bombs at a high school, but Miles gets her arrested. The gang gets her out of prison and find their boss is Vincent the Doombot that is working for humanity and is against meta beings. She brings her hacker friend in, which is now a ghost, with Doctor Strange like a magical egg, which also gives her a social security number and identity in the Marvel Universe because she didn't have that before. She's just like me and you that popped up into the comics. Gwen is leading the new gang and finds out her boss is a Doombot and betrays her because he is against superpowers. He's basically a Doombot that was raised by a human scientist that grew feelings against people with powers because bad things happened. It's almost like getting a fear of mutants, but this Doombot really started to hate anybody with powers. We then get into the 5 out of 5s, which is the Wildstorm 11 through 17. A war between Stormwatch is brewing, and many of the Gen 13 characters and their parents are introduced. Most of the DNA of the parents was spliced with alien DNA, gives them their abilities. Lynch is going to Backlash and others to tell them the truth, and that they are being hunted. It introduced Jack Harksmoor in this world, into this pretty crazy plot. It's very conspiracy driven, and it's sort of a war between Skywatch, the Weatherman, the Wildcats, and the third party is IO. So a lot of conspiracy between agencies, and two agencies just want to kill each other, IO and Stormwatch. So we get Booster Gold. One rules the Earth and one rules the skies. Booster Gold 3 through 6. Booster Gold continues to work down to take the 1,000. I said the 100 before, but they're the 1,000. At one time, Skeets is thought destroyed. He develops the characters of his agent and the assistant. Superman finds out his origin, Booster Gold's origin, of him being a football star and having a gambling problem, and then stealing technology to become a hero in the past, and does not think much of him. Superman's pretty angry. And what happens in this one is there's this alien being that's like a Micronaut, but not a Micronaut, but just like a tiny being that's seeking Superman's help. And Booster Gold has to ask Superman. He says, I can get a hold of Superman. So this he meets this kid that has this Micronaut in his pocket, which is a real life alien being, and says, I can introduce you to Superman. And then so they get together, and then Skeets accidentally tells his origin story, and then Superman's like, fuck this, man, you're a bad person. We then get into Villains United 1 and 2, so this is actually going back in time because I talked about Secret Six. The villains that will not join the Society are brought together by Mockingbird. The Society does not like being turned down, so wants to make examples of these people, and they actually become the Secret Six because they said no to the Society. So I think that takes us. So now we're going to be entering the last week of November and then December. I think with the next episode, if I do, well, I'll do three more. when I get back from the holidays, I'll do 3 more weeks and then I'll almost be caught up, but I'll be probably 2 weeks behind. So in the next 2 episodes, you'll be seeing the weekly read sort of live if I can keep a schedule up, which I plan on doing. The other things I want to mention is that in 2019, Mike M's Collector's Corner will return, but I'm not going to overcommit myself. I'm going to, at a minimum, you'll see 6 episodes. So that's like a bi-monthly type episode. That's because I have to schedule people to talk to that are collectors, and I have to coordinate that, and it takes a little more work than me just popping on a earplugs and start recording. And then schedules, especially my schedule, trying to marry up with other people's schedules is kind of difficult. And my Sundays, which is my most flexible day for podcasting, is sort of already taken up by Geek Brunch and Geek Brunch Retrocast and DC Spotlight. So I'd have to coordinate on another night, and it's going to be tough, but I think I can coordinate 6 episodes for 2019. So you'll see 6 more Collector's Corners coming up, and I hope you enjoy it. I want to thank you all for listening to the episodes, supporting the show. I hope you enjoy the show. I enjoy doing it. And I don't really know how many listeners there are. I don't check statistics. I don't really have access to the statistics because I have to go ask Derek for them. But I don't ask for them. I don't know. I might have 10 listeners. I might have hundreds of listeners or thousands of listeners and not even know about it. I know there's a handful of people that do listen regularly, so I know I at least have, I think, about 10 listeners. But in actuality, it's cool to have listeners, but I like doing this show, so I'm gonna keep doing it regardless of whether people listen or not. I think it's like a good auto diary that can always be out there, and I hope somebody when I'm gone and I've left this earth, people can go back and find out how much I love the medium, and it can my enthusiasm and collector enthusiasm will encourage people to always listen to this show when I'm long gone. So it is a diary and it's like a time capsule. So maybe somebody in the future will listen to these things and say, "Wow, this guy loved comics." And that's all I can hope for. But you can reach me on the Twitters and send me questions at any time because you see I like to answer questions and or comments about things. And you can reach me anytime at Mike Myers Brunch. You could send me an IM directly, or you can just say at Mike Myers Brunch. I will record it and put it on a future episode. The question and then an answer. You can also send me email at mike@comicbooknoise.com. I will also take those questions and answer them on the show. I want to thank you all for the people that provided questions in 2018, as they were all good questions and they led to long episodes because I just talked a lot, try and answer these questions and think them off the cuff. And really, I don't look at these questions in advance. I kind of just go there. So you really get everything off the cuff. I don't plan anything. I have a general idea what I think I'm going to talk about, and then it turns into whatever I feel like it, just by rambling. And I think it's going to be an interesting 2019, especially if you're hearing the emotion of the week instead of hearing about books that I read in the past. You're hearing about the passion of the book that I just read. So I think it's going to be a little bit different. I don't know if I'll be able to keep it every week because of work. I think January is going to be a bitch, and so is February. But and then I think I got C2E2. But we'll see how it all goes, and I'll try to keep the schedule. If not, I can catch up pretty quick. I just prove that I can do weekly reads in one episode and just knock a bunch out. So I want to thank you for all your questions. I hope you ask more questions. I hope you collect comics. I hope you read your comics. I hope you love your comics. I hope you are able to just escape in your comics and even enjoy them for what they are, even the ones you don't like. I hope you can find something in every comic that you're like, hey, I like the inks, or I like the colors, or I like the logo, or I think there's something worthwhile in every experience with the comic book, even the ones you don't like. So if you have that attitude and you're able to try to escape instead of get frustrated and about titles, I think you're gonna like your comics a lot more. And I know how I like them more. It's because I mood read, and I think that helps me have more of a power, a positive outlook than if I was forcing myself to read stuff. I think it would be tougher. But I want to thank you for listening, and we'll see you in 2019. And I hope you all have a safe holiday. I hope you have some time off to just relax and recharge, even if it's a day or two. And I hope you have a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, or whatever you celebrate. Or if you're an atheist, I hope you just are enjoying your life. So, happy holidays, and see you in 2019. And I hope you have a wonderful end to 2018 and a very, very happy new year. So take care, and we'll see you soon.